Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really digging into a super critical decision point for organizations.
Yeah, a really tense one.
Exactly. It's that moment after a major disruption, like a strike, where you have to decide, when do we stop relying on temporary coverage?
The stopgaps, the agency staff.
Right. And commit fully to permanent hires again. Or maybe for the first time in those roles.
It's maybe the highest stakes balancing act in workforce planning. Get the timing wrong and, well, it costs you big time.
So our mission today really is to give you a solid framework for making that call.
Precisely. Because that strike coverage, you know, the temps, the contract folks, it's like scaffolding. Absolutely necessary during the storm to keep things running.
Good analogy. Keeps the building standing.
But you wouldn't live on the scaffolding permanently, would you? The second you start treating that temporary structure as your foundation, that's where the trouble starts.
You need it to survive, sure, but you can't build a resilient long-term business on it.
You got it. Relying on it too long, it just becomes counterproductive.
Yeah.
Financially, operationally, it starts to drain you.
And the timing of that pivot. Too soon, maybe things aren't stable yet. Too late.
Too late, you're just hemorrhaging cash and goodwill. It really does shape your financial health, your labor stability, everything.
Okay. The sources we've looked at, they offer a pretty clear decision framework, some specific triggers even.
Yeah, the goal here is to help you shift from being purely reactive, just surviving day to day, to becoming resilient, planning for actual growth.
Okay, let's tackle that inertia first. The strike's over, things are maybe running okay with the temps. Why not just keep them? It seems flexible, right?
Yeah.
Avoids commitment. What's the downside?
Well, that's the trap, isn't it? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it is broken, just in ways that aren't immediately obvious on the surface.
How so?
The operation might look like it's running, yeah, but it's running on super expensive fuel, and it's constantly leaking vital stuff, like institutional knowledge.
So the costs aren't just the hourly rate.
Not even close. We talk about the five drains. Staying in that temporary coverage mode for too long, it quietly eats away at the organization's core strength.
Okay, let's break down those drains. What's the first one, the obvious one?
Financial efficiency, or rather, the lack of it. Temporary labor is just incredibly expensive.
Premium rates, right?
Premium rates, yeah, often, you know, up to 40% higher than a permanent equivalent. Plus agency fees, admin costs. And you're constantly retraining.
Constantly onboarding.
Constantly. Think of it like a really pricey subscription you're barely using but paying full price for month after month. Those costs just pile up way beyond what steady, permanent employment costs over time. You're basically just bleeding cash slowly.
Okay, so drain number one is the direct cost. What else? You mentioned knowledge leaking out.
That's drain number two. Operational continuity. Your temps, generally, they're focused on the task at hand. Fill the shift. Do the job description. They rarely build up that deep institutional knowledge, the process familiarity, the trust across teams that you need for smooth, efficient operations. This constant churn, it introduces risk. Quality control slips. Safety can be compromised.
Because there's no ownership.
Exactly. They can do the job, but they don't own the process. They're not incentivized to fix underlying issues.
Makes sense. And what about the folks who are permanent? How does this affect them?
That's drain number three. Culture and retention, relying heavily on temps, it weakens that sense of we're all in this together.
Yeah, I can see that.
Permanent teams build cohesion, accountability, they invest emotionally. But if your core permanent staff sees management relying indefinitely on this often highly paid temporary workforce, well, engagement plummets.
Creates resentment, maybe.
Definitely. It can really damage morale among the very people you need to build your future on. And then there's the risk side.
Drain number four.
Risk management. This one's sensitive. If you keep using replacement or temporary labor long after a strike is technically resolved, especially if returning workers are back, it can really inflame union tensions. It can look retaliatory or like an attempt to undermine the union. That brings massive legal and reputational risk down the line.
So even if things seem calm, the company is still sending a message of distrust.
Precisely. And that leads to the fifth drain, strategic alignment. Temporary coverage is fundamentally reactive. It's about surviving today.
Maintenance mode.
Exactly. But if you want to grow, innovate, launch new products, improve efficiency, you need consistent, permanent talent. Mm. People who can be trained, developed, and who stick around. The moment your focus shifts from just keeping the lights on to actually improving the engine, you need permanent folks.
Okay, that lays out the risks of delaying really clearly.
Yeah.
So if you're convinced, okay, we need to stop the bleeding, dismantle the scaffolding, what are the signals, the concrete triggers that tell a business now's the time to shift?
Yeah, there are some key indicators. We tend to group them into, say, operational, financial, and then the relationship side.
Okay.
Trigger one is pretty fundamental. Demand has stabilized or expanded. Simple as that. If your operations are back to normal levels or even growing, well, the contingency reason is gone.
It's not a temporary blip anymore.
Right. You're no longer managing a temporary disruption. You're now managing a permanent dependency on these temporary roles. And if it's a dependency,
it should probably be permanent staff.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Is there a time element here?
There is. A really useful rule of thumb from consultants in this area. If that temporary coverage goes beyond 6 months, and there's no clear end date in sight.
This much.
Yeah, that's your signal to seriously assess permanent hiring. It's often when agency contracts renew, sometimes at higher rates, and the training costs really start to bite from the churn.
So 6 months kind of forces the conversation internally.
It absolutely should.
Yeah.
Then trigger two is financial. Cost trends favor permanence. You have to actually run the numbers.
Get the spreadsheet out.
You got it. Compare the total cost of those temps, wages, fees, training, everything over, say, the next 12 or 18 months versus the predictable costs and the compounding return on investment you get from permanent hires.
Because permanent hires theoretically get more productive over time, turnover less.
Exactly. They become cheaper and more valuable the longer they stay. Trigger three relates to the nature of the work itself. The role requires long-term knowledge.
Okay, so not all roles are equal here.
Definitely not. You need to differentiate. Is this a role that's genuinely flexible, maybe like seasonal warehouse help? Or is it a role needing consistency, deep system understanding, maybe customer-facing brand alignment?
Right, like complex machine operators or quality control.
Perfect examples. If your temps are handling critical systems, sensitive data, key safety procedures, that constant churn isn't just inefficient, it's a major risk. Permanence solves that consistency problem.
Okay, that covers the operational and financial side. What about the people side, the labor situation?
Crucial. Trigger number four, the labor dispute has resolved or stabilized. Once you have an agreement where things have clearly cooled down, the original reason for the contingency coverage is gone.
So keeping them sends the wrong signal.
It can, yeah. Transitioning back towards permanent hiring signals you're moving forward, rebuilding trust, holding on to temps can look like you're keeping leverage, or worse.
Got it. And the last trigger.
Trigger five is more forward-looking. The business is entering a growth or optimization phase. Remember, temps are for maintenance, survival.
Keeping the lights on.
Right. Permanent hiring supports improvement, efficiency drives, continuous improvement projects, major safety initiatives, taking real ownership. If your strategy involves getting better, not just staying afloat, your staffing model needs to reflect that commitment to stability.
Okay, so those triggers tell you when to start thinking seriously about it. Mm. But you said earlier, you can't just rely on gut feeling. What's the structured way to actually make the decision, the data-driven part?
Yeah, instinct isn't enough when the stakes are this high. The best practice points to a rigorous five-step framework. It forces you to evaluate across key dimensions: duration, cost, role type, risk, and strategy.
Okay, step one.
Step one, define the time horizon. Ask honestly, is this staffing need really temporary or is it looking indefinite? If you've had the same roles covered by temps for, say, 9 months already.
9 months now?
Yeah, the business case for making them permanent gets much, much stronger. Industry benchmarks often use 9 to 12 months as a key threshold.
Why that window specifically?
Because that's typically the point where the initial investment in a permanent hire recruitment, full onboarding benefits kicking in, starts to be clearly outweighed by their sustained productivity and lower long-term costs compared to continuing with premium temps.
Okay, so that gives a hard number to anchor the discussion. Step two.
Step two, run the cost model. This isn't optional. You absolutely have to quantify it.
Total cost of ownership, basically.
Exactly. Compare the total cost of keeping the temps versus converting. The math usually favors conversion if the break-even point where the permanent hire becomes cheaper overall hits within the next, say, 12 to 18 months.
You mentioned compounding ROI earlier. Can you unpack that a bit? Is it just wage savings?
It starts with wage savings, sure, that's immediate. Yep. But the compounding part comes from things like lower turnover, shorter learning curves over time, reduced error rates because they know the system's inside out, better safety records.
Ah, so it's the value they add beyond just doing the task.
Precisely. They require less supervision They suggest improvements. They contribute to a more stable environment. That's the ROI that grows over time.
Okay. Step three.
Assess operational fit. Look closely at the roles being covered. Do they directly impact product quality, safety standards, customer experience?
The critical roles.
Yeah. If the answer is yes, then permanence is really needed to minimize the risk that comes with churn in those positions. You need consistency there.
Which brings us back to the labor relations piece.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like the trickiest step.
It is definitely the most sensitive. That's step four. Evaluate the labor relations climate. This requires real nuance. If relations are stable, a deal is done, then moving to permanent hires helps normalize things.
Okay. But?
But, and this is critical, if tensions are still high, or worse, if contract negotiations are actively happening, the strong recommendation is delay conversion.
Why? What's the risk?
The risk is it looks like you're trying to change the workforce structure during bargaining to gain leverage, or that you're retaliating or trying to undermine the union's position. Legally, very risky, can be seen as bad faith bargaining.
So wait until the dust settles on the contract front.
Absolutely. Get the agreements finalized first. Then step five is basically align with organizational strategy. Make sure this pivot isn't just seen as an HR cleanup task.
Frame it bigger picture.
Exactly. Frame it as part of the overall business strategy, supporting growth, efficiency, whatever the company's goals are. It gives the move more weight and purpose.
All right. So let's say the framework gives you the green light. The data says go. The timing feels right. How do you actually do this smoothly? How do you implement the change without tanking morale or creating that dreaded two-tier workforce?
Execution is everything here. It really comes down to smart selection and careful integration. First, be strategic about which roles you convert.
Not necessarily all of them at once.
Probably not. Start with the core operational roles, the ones that are essential for day-to-day stability. Maybe more variable roles, like seasonal peaks, can stay temporary for longer.
Focus on the foundation first. Makes sense. And selecting who gets the permanent offers.
Often, your best candidates are right under your nose, the existing contingent staff who've been performing well. But you must use objective criteria.
Like what?
Look at their track record. Attendance, safety record, quality metrics, how well they fit the team culture. Document it. Using clear metrics makes the process fair and defensible.
And it rewards the good performers.
Exactly. Plus, it dramatically cuts down your onboarding time and costs. But the communication around this.
Yeah, that sounds critical. Especially with the union involved.
Absolutely crucial. Step one here is communicate transparently. You have to frame the decision clearly. This is about operational stability, business needs, future growth. It's not about favoritism or retaliation.
And if there's a union.
You share the objective, performance-based selection criteria with them. Be upfront. It builds credibility and helps head off grievances later. Transparency is non-negotiable here.
Okay, selection and communication. What about once they're hired? How do you avoid that us versus them feeling?
Deep investment in integration. This is where companies often stumble. These newly converted employees need the full onboarding experience.
Not just a change in payroll status.
No way. Proper orientation, benefits enrollment explained clearly, safety refreshers, maybe even a mentor assigned. Treat them exactly like any other new permanent hire.
Because skipping that makes them feel like outsiders still.
Precisely. That's how you get that toxic two-tier culture. They feel like second-class citizens, they don't fully commit, and often they leave within a year. Then you're back to square one.
So what are the biggest mistakes you see companies make when they try to execute this pivot?
The number one mistake is probably just clinging to contingency mode too long. Inertia wins. They get used to the perceived flexibility. They ignore the mounting costs and the burnout factor, and they just get stuck.
Kicking the can down the road.
Yeah. Another big one is ignoring union sensitivities. Thinking the selection process is just an HR thing when it's fundamentally a labor relations issue. Huge mistake.
Rushing, it seems like another potential pitfall.
Definitely. Rushing to convert before the labor situation is truly stable or before demand is really predictable. And sometimes staying flexible is the right call, at least for a bit longer.
But wouldn't it be too early?
Well, if your demand forecast is still all over the place, maybe highly uncertain for the next 6 months. Or if you genuinely anticipate needing to scale down soon, the cost of layoffs for permanent staff could temporarily outweigh the temp premiums. Don't force permanence if stability isn't really there yet.
Okay, let's fast forward. You've made the pivot, converted key roles, integrated them. The new foundation is settling. How do you know if it actually worked? What should you be tracking on your dashboard over the next 6 months, year?
Great question. You absolutely have to validate the decision with data. You need metrics that show both the financial win and the improvement in stability and morale.
So what are the key KPIs?
First, track the average cost per labor hour. This is your bottom line financial proof. Did it save money?
And what's a good target?
A successful pivot should deliver a noticeable 10 to 20% reduction in that average cost after about 12 months. That comes from ditching agency fees, reducing premium pay, less overtime, maybe.
Okay, clear cost savings. What else?
Second, monitor retention rate closely. We're aiming for stability, right? So a good indicator is getting that overall rate to 85% or higher at the 1 year mark for the whole relevant workforce.
And specifically for the people who are converted.
Even more critical, you want to see turnover among that specific group. The converted employees stay under 15% after their first year.
Why is that so important?
Because if that number is low, it tells you the integration worked. They feel like they belong, they're vested. If it's high, something went wrong in the onboarding or cultural integration.
Got it. So that low turnover confirms you actually dismantled the us versus them dynamic.
It's a strong indicator, yes. We also look at grievance volume, especially if there's a union. Is it declining compared to the strike period or the immediate aftermath? That's a sensitive barometer of labor relations health and trust.
Fewer complaints mean things are settling down.
Generally, yes. And beyond those core metrics, the focus should shift. You move from just plugging gaps to things like capability building, cross-training employees, creating internal career paths, activities that sustain stability long term.
#outro.
That was a really thorough walkthrough, from the risks of delay to the triggers, the framework, execution.
Wow. I think the core takeaway for me is that this move from temporary survival mode back to permanent, stable operations, it has to be deliberate, strategic.
Absolutely. Not just reacting when the pain gets too bad or falling back into old habits. It needs data, planning.
And that ideal moment seems to be when a few key things line up.
That's right. The sweet spot is really when you have reasonable stability in your operations, some predictability in demand, and real clarity in your labor relations. When those three align, that's usually the time.
And organizations that manage that pivot well, using objective criteria, communicating openly, they come out stronger.
Definitely. More stable financially, more unified internally, and better positioned for whatever comes next.
So here's a final thought, something for you, our listener, to maybe mull over based on all this. Leaders, understandably, focus a lot on the visible expense of temps, the premium rates, the agency fee.
Hard costs.
Right. But they often fail to really calculate the true hidden long-term cost of inaction, the cost of not pivoting. So if you find your organization repeatedly relying on temporary staff, maybe year after year, for roles that aren't truly temporary, ask yourself, is that perceived flexibility really worth the ongoing drain of lost knowledge, the constant churn, the potentially weakened culture?
It's that critical choice, short-term convenience versus long-term resilience and strength worth thinking about.
Definitely something to consider.
Thanks for that deep dive.
My pleasure. Until next time.